to the Audio Nowcast, sponsored by Apex and Westwave Audio. Now from the Nowcast Network studios, here's Mike.
Hey, welcome to the Audio Nowcast. My name is Mike Rodriguez, and before we get going, let me introduce the guys.
Over here,
on my right, I'm sorry, who are you again?
I'm not sure. I was hoping you'd tell me.
He has to sing happy birthday to himself and wait for the chorus.
Once you say my name, I'm all right. I can remember it for at least an hour.
The one and only songwriter extraordinaire.
It is him! He has arrived!
And someone who we've missed, it's been a long, long time, Pagey Boy, but Martin Page, welcome.
Can I go now? Thank you very much, Mike.
And next to him, we've got writer extraordinaire, a man who writes so good that I get nervous sending him emails, Bobby Osinski. Bobby.
Happy 100, Mike.
And next to him, we've got, well, you know how they say there's music all around us? Diego.
Mm-hmm.
Stucco.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Is that me?
That's you.
Yeah. Great. Yes,
proves that every single day. And next to him, we have, well, he can do buzzes and swishes and bangs and all kinds of cool stuff.
He's no hands to that.
He's a great musician.
Sounds like a good night out.
A buzz swish and a bang.
That's about all.
And that's just in his life. Great musician, good drummer, guitar player, and we're really behind on a project.
That's right, we are, Mike. That's right.
Brandon Birdside.
What's up, Brandon?
Next to him, we have Mr. Analog himself, the man
the old git himself.
The man that's, well, he's as old as some of the gear that he uses.
Hard, but yes.
The one and only, I can answer any question, Bobby Summerfield.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's my boobazella.
Let's hear your boobazella. No, I'll put it away.
And finally,
have to watch it.
We have someone who knows what it's like to be the smartest person in the room all the time.
Yep.
Who, when it was just even before sequencers were just a mere thought, went out there and programmed a sequencer for Stevie Wonder with a business program. I mean, how do you do that?
It's Rob, been so long, I don't remember.
Rob, I've never missed a podcast. Arbiteer.
Yeah, thank you.
And guys,
thank you, thank you. Yes, thank you.
I like that definition.
The Iron Man of the podcast, Rob Arbiteer.
Yeah.
Showing some signs of rust, but thank you.
And guys, this is podcast 100. We made it. 100. 100 episodes. Yeah. Over 100 hours. 100 episodes.
How does it feel, Mike, to be that bloody old?
Old. Yeah. Old.
Yeah. Wow. 100.
100 episodes. I'll tell you really quick, what's amazing with the podcast is it's grown every year. We're now getting...
What's grown every year?
The podcast.
Okay. Okay. Just want to be sure.
Welcome back, Paige. it's grown every year. Our listenership is up. I mean, we're doing unbelievable numbers.
Brilliant.
We used to be doing, when we first started, we were 1,000 downloads a show. Now we're up to about 6,500 downloads a show.
Wow.
Which is pretty amazing. It's gone up. So we've done some really cool stuff. You know,
I think we should say congratulations to Mike.
Oh, yes.
Thank you. Our leader, our God.
We're looking for one. We need another one.
Just to give you a little history on the podcast, the podcast started through some dinners, actually with Rob, a couple conversations with Rob. We'd go to the NAMM show, and afterwards we'd get together, usually Rob, myself, and Larry Dropa. We would do some dinners, and we'd start talking about gear and stuff like that. And I thought, hey, you know what? This would be a good thing to do a podcast on. And We started 5 years ago.
Wow.
April 6th was our first recording of our first podcast. Of course, in true Audio Nowcast style, I posted it a month later. but that was our first podcast.
It was the audio eventual cast.
That's right. But hey, I just want to play something for you guys and see if you can remember this.
This is the very first podcast that we're doing, and we're all learning a lot, so we're just going to have a good time. And right now, before we get going, I'd like to introduce the panel that's going to be here on the podcast. And to my right is Martin.
How you doing, Mikey?
And we got Scott.
Yeah, hello.
We got Bobby.
Hello, hello, hello.
And we got Rob.
Pleasure to be here.
You sound scared out of your mind.
Oh my God. Can you believe that? Sounds like we're going to a dentist or something.
You sounded so subdued.
Let me tell you, when we did the first podcast, right, I spent all the time getting it all ready, getting all the technical things, and we're running so smooth now. But, and then I'll never forget when we started recording, and all you guys looked at me, and I'm like,
"Yeah,
holy smokes, I got to start talking.
You got to host this thing." You sounded a little terrified, actually.
I was scared spitless, I'll tell you that much. And
but you got through it, and here you are, which is great.
Yeah, but
scary thing is we're all sat in the same places 5 years ago.
I got the same shirt on.
But let me give you a couple really quick little facts and figures about our podcast, how our growth's been. When we first started, we were like stoked when we hit like 11 countries. I don't know if you guys remember that.
I do remember that.
11.
I didn't know there was 11.
And then we hit 21, and we were like, yeah, 21 countries. Now we're in 62 countries, actually over 62, but I figure a couple of those Eastern European countries are probably spammers and bots.
Right.
But 62 countries, that's pretty amazing. We have listeners in every single state of the union except four, and I wonder if you guys can guess which four.
Wow. States where they have something
Alaska.
Better to do.
Wyoming, Montana, South Dakota.
What?
And Delaware.
Well, we've got to get them.
I know.
We've got to get them.
We should go open, I think we should go down and do it.
That's our job.
Hip-hop festival. Yeah,
like we're going to bring them together. Podcast.
Okay, and the country that has more listeners to visit our webpage, not necessarily subscribe to our podcast, but to visit our webpage is?
Germany.
Yeah. Nice.
Definitely.
Germany.
Yep.
More so than the U.S. And I think it's because of Thomas and Musa Talk. And
also, the more technically advanced, I think. I really do think the Germans are much smarter, kind of, on a mass level. Kids are playing.
Hey, they're better dressers.
Yeah, I agree.
That's there's been some pretty cool things and pretty cool growth with the podcast, and it's just great. And our Facebook's doing really good, and we've got a lot of good friends, a lot of really active users out there. One thing I wanted to ask you guys, though, is if you look back these past 5 years, music's changed a lot, and I know the way each one of us works, we've kind of changed too. I'm going to open it up really quick. What's the one biggest surprise that you've embraced in the last 5 years that you just had no clue was going to?
I think when we started this podcast, there was still a music industry. That was kind of a big change. There were still record stores.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah. What would be, Rob, what would be one tool or something that you just use now that you just never even dreamed of?
Back then?
Yeah.
You know, in a lot of ways, we're using like version 8 of stuff we were probably using version 2 of.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Then I don't think we've actually changed the way we work all that much because we were able to do everything we needed to back then.
Right.
What has changed is the way we get the work.
I got you.
And the way we find the projects and the unbelievable amounts of money we're supposed to agree to do them for nowadays compared to what they had back then. The budgets have changed. The kind of work, you know, how we find the work has changed for us. But we basically do it the same once we get it.
I think the one thing for me that's been amazing about the whole, let's face it, the digital revolution was one of the big things. And that's actually what's one of the cool things about our podcast is when you listen to the early episodes, we still have people going, "Hey, I bought my first record off iTunes. There's this thing called iTunes." and now, you know, you've got, you know, stuff like Pandora and things of that nature. It's just evolved so much. But
which is going public soon, by the way. Anybody interested?
Yeah, I know. That's going to be interesting. But one thing that I've noticed in the last 5 years is how we've kind of gotten over that digital hump, and it just seems like now music and software and gear and computers are, they almost seem disposable. You know, they really are, you know, you kind of keep your data in a cluster, but you have to move it to different hard drives, and you move in and out of programs, and you've got new programs coming in and new programs coming out. And it's just the mobility that you have now in how you work. You're not tied to your studio like you were in the old days where you had to be tied to that room. I can pretty much pick up and go to any studio, just bring it with me in my laptop. And I think that's one of the biggest things that's really kind of changed and kind of even the playing field for good or bad for a lot of people. I mean, Bobby, do you find yourself being able to?
I agree with you. I think the last five years, other than of course the negative sides of the music industry kind of imploded completely, is that mobile networking, the iPad, the iPhone, you know, Apple's obviously the leader there. It's made everybody's job a much, much easier, much more flexible, fluid way of working. So for people that want to do in the box stuff, I mean, that's a big thing. And I think for the negative side of it, everybody's just said, okay, MP3s are good enough and let's go for it. Whereas about 5 years ago, I think I was one of the very silly people with hoping, oh, maybe we're going to go to HD audio. We're going to 100K audio coming out soon. Yeah, obviously.
That came and went.
Was I wrong about that? But there again, the quality of the music these days, I'm quite glad I only hear an MP3 because anything higher broadband would be terrible. Mm. I think that's about it, right?
Brian, what about you in the last 5 years?
The last 5 years have been amazing. I mean, it's made my career possible, the whole inside the box thing. I learned inside of the box, and I've taken it since outside of the box. But without the all these different softwares like Reason and Ableton and Cubase and obviously Pro Tools, it wouldn't have been possible. So I'm very thankful for the technological advances we've had in the last few years.
Well, especially your job with the incredible turnaround that you have to do on a daily basis for this bigger project that you work on.
Exactly.
I mean, we're talking, you know, giant trailers that are being played and across the world, and you know, you have to get the cuts done in days. It's not even weeks now. It's days.
Yeah, not even days. It's hours. You know, it's the expectations of these clients are, you know, everything's instant. You know, so it's the software that we have and the tools we have it's the only way it's possible.
Martin, what about you as a songwriter and technology changing? How's that changed your songwriting?
I just think for me over the last 5 years, it's just been a learning curve for me to believe that everything can be done a little bit faster and quicker. Not always for the best reasons, because sometimes I think when we move too fast, you don't have time to study as much as you might in the past, where you'd have to let something soak into the song or into the track. But in general, I've been finding I've just been getting more and more confident with the digital format. I still ache a little bit for a slower process, so that you can step back and just visualize something for the feel of things a little bit longer. But then again, I'm also addicted to what's been going on in the technology, because I actually like to feel like I can move a bit faster. I can save things to hard drive and be safe. But for me, it's just been, I've been on a learning curve, just trying to get used to. I've come through so many stages of writing, right from, you know, two-track tape and cassettes right through to what we're dealing with now. So in a way, I was talking to Bobby recently in his studio. It's very rare to have people like ourselves that have been veterans.
Still alive.
Yeah. But have been veterans through all these changes. And in some ways, when you look at some of the software that's coming in, because we've known what it is to work on the analog and to work on the Portex and work on the Studas, we tend to be able to utilize even the software a little bit better, because we know what they should do.
Right. Mm-hmm.
So it's exciting, but at the same time, the only thing I've found a bit, I've had to train myself, is to step back a little bit and not move too fast, so that I get a clarity in my writing.
Diego, what about you in sound design? I mean, that's 5 years, boy. It's some big changes.
Yeah, it's a lot. But not specifically in sound design. What I was happy to see was the birth and growth of possibility for musicians to do what they like, new ways of creating new music, videos, contents. Right. I think also what changed is the way internet now is a major factor in making something happen or not. If something works and it's really, really strong on the internet, it could actually become a financial success. that is something that 5 years ago I don't think was so strong, and now it is.
Right.
And I'm not talking just about my views. Sure. I'm talking about many people that do the most different things that you wouldn't even know about it without the internet. So that's to me is the biggest change. And in sound design, of course, there's always this struggle to create new things, new different things that haven't been done in the past.
Right.
So it's getting on my end. It's exciting. I don't feel the pressure because I just feel the excitement of it. But definitely, I can tell you that we're moving faster and faster,
right,
because everything is converging into the same spot, and everybody can see what to do.
I think one thing to comment on is over the last 5 years, I think the biggest thing to change is the race to loudness. I think mastering has gone through the biggest change, where people have to have everything extremely loud. If you look back 5 years, records are kind of soft.
Right.
I mean, they weren't, but they were. And now you get like just one large block of audio.
Yeah.
And I think the last 5 years, certainly the last year, has been the mastering people.
That's a good point. You know, it's destroyed a lot of good music too.
Yeah.
Bobby, what about you with you know, your writing and education in general? I mean, the past 5 years.
I can't speak to that, to be honest with you, but I'll tell you what I can speak to. When I think back 5 years ago, I was just coming to grips with the end of what I felt was the end of 5.1 surround sound music. And I had a company called Surround Associates that for, I don't know, 7 or 8 years, all we did was, surround sound records for the major labels. We did 120 or so. And at 5 years ago, it was just about the time when it became unprofitable, where suddenly we're doing three times the amount of work for a third of the budget.
Yeah.
And it became a point where it got to a point where it's like, well, this is no longer financially viable to be able to do this. And nobody was buying it anyway. So at that point, I personally came to grips that, well, this was the great hope for the future that isn't for the future. It's not going to happen. So that's kind of what when I look back 5 years, that's the big thing that really jumps out at me. If I look again on a personal level, the other thing I think in the 5 years hence has been for me the ability to mix in the box and coming to terms with that. That's actually a viable way of working, mixing in the box, where before, being an old analog guy like some of us here on the panel, where you're always in front of faders, going to a point where, well, I don't know that I need those anymore.
Is it just that Bobbies are old? Is that what it is?
You know, I'll tell you one thing that's happened in these last 5 years that we kind of saw the whole battle was the whole digital versus analog. And it's just kind of turned into, you know what, you need both. You really need both. You still need flavors of analog, and you can't beat Pro Tools. You
but
can't beat
digital workstation. I haven't been in one of those discussions analog is better digital, in a long time.
Yeah, it doesn't even come up anymore. And especially with the new hardware coming out, the new clocks coming out, digital sounding really, really good. Now if you go to tape, it's because you want that tape sound. Right. But I will say I've been involved with a couple of music projects where they've actually gone out and had the masters made, and they've actually did some vinyl cutting and did one-off masters and things like that. And they went for that analog sound, and they ended up not using the analog mastered because it was a little just contained. You know, when they went to the digital and they kept it raw from their original files, and they went to the non-analog route, they still, you know, mastered in the mastering suite. It still had the width, and it had the center, and it had the dynamics. And so it was just a good example of it.
I'll tell you personally, I would never go back to tape ever again. Now, as far as analog is concerned, there's nothing like going through a nice old Neve.
Right.
And the last project I did was through a nice, you know, 8068 that was fabulous and sounded great and sounded just the way we all remember. But I would never go back to tape because of the hassles and just a general pain in the ass for the whole thing. I'm much happier in digital domain, just as a general, just having a recorder there.
Yeah.
You know,
as much as we love the sound of tape, it was kind of a pain in the butt. I mean, it was, although some guys could really work, like Martin, you were awesome with your tape deck. I mean, you could work your controls the way you did your punches and stuff like that. Did you miss that?
I still miss it. You know, I'm one of those guys that I did a lot of stuff on the Studer for longer than I should have. And I was even producing some tracks when everybody else was saying, you know, we need to get stems from you. And I was like, what's a f***ing stem? It's a gardening or something. You know? And I still feel, because I've been making some records and I've used some of my old masters from my analog days and mixed them in with some new songs that have been done digitally. And I still feel that there is a sound, and that I'm a purist, you know. I mean, yeah, for the high-speed running factory job, throw it out, yeah. But if you're going to stop and you really want to treasure something and stare at it, it's still hard. Still hard,
right,
to beat tape. Still hard, sonically, for me.
I listened to this morning. I woke up and the radio was playing. Like, I actually Pandora on my iPad. But I listened to it, and I was just listening to pop music. And I kind of switched it off, and I was like, bored. But I thought back to when I was in England as a young kid. It's crazy. It's quite a vivid memory. And I remember listening to hearing Queen come on the radio and then another band come on the radio and how different they sounded, but how each band had such a character.
Right.
And all of them sound now, they just sound like...
Yes.
And it's fantastic. They all sound very loud and it's great, right. But I'm like, but what? Is that the same thing with the other band? Is that the same? It's just one large digital copy. It's sad. There's no... I mean, I miss that. I really do miss the character of each person, each band having his own character.
I think it comes down to one thing as well, like Bobby's saying, is it's against speed,
right,
or against something which you know, it's like a good book which are vanishing as well. You know, sometimes you just got to say, we need to record it this way, and we see the picture that way.
Right.
Now, it means longer doing, it means fighting, and it means, you know, the machine's breaking down, but at the end of a project, you know, you can still sometimes say that was where I wanted it to be, because we are all a little bit succumbing to saying quicker, faster, better, don't have to really worry about anything.
But it's true also, you know, you just made a comparison with a book. I still find books that I like to read, and they're not mainstream books at all. So for the same reason, you can find music on YouTube from a little guy that is doing something crazy, and it sounds like his sound.
Sure.
You can see, really, I saw a video from a guy that was trying to make something out of a Casio CZ-1, something sounding great and cool, and he made it. And then other things, you know, you just have to look in a different direction, I think.
Sure.
The radio, to me, today, it's not really representative of what's going on.
No, that's true.
In the musical underground.
You know, it's funny you should mention that, because today I was listening to a variety of channels, and I was thinking about, and you know, up until now, our discussion has been about audio, but music has changed a lot in the last 5 years, where it's very homogenized and it's very much the same.
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm. And part of it is the fact that it's so sequenced all the time, and everything is so much in the box that the fact that they're that you listen and you find out even the rhythms are starting to be the same. And I was really disturbed. I listened for an hour and I thought, why isn't there any difference between the first song I heard an hour ago and the one now? They're pretty much the same.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. I'll tell you, a great Pandora channel that I created was if you put in ELO, it plays some great classic music with an ELO channel. That everything from the great Supertramp to Journey to ELO, and it's just, you listen to that and you hear all the just the character of the music, and not only of the music but of the songwriting too. Nowadays, if I put in a modern band, you get kind of like what Patrick Leonard was saying about that, you know, how it's all been homogenized and the tools that we use kind of almost force it into a certain way of writing and the chord progressions and things like that. So it's just refreshing to hear something else besides that.
You know, I'm sorry, Mike, but from a production standpoint, there's something else as well. And it's the fact that auto-tune has really hurt us and quantization has really hurt us from the standpoint that you can make something perfect and everybody expects it to be perfect.
Auto-tune is ridiculous. And beyond. Yeah.
And everybody expects it.
Yeah. Yeah.
And just to give you an example, I'm writing the memoirs of Ken Scott. Ken Scott was one of the four Beatle engineers, and he was also the producer for David Bowie and Supertramp and all the great 70s bands. But one of the things we're talking about is David Bowie. He did 6 albums with them, and every single vocal was first take. They didn't even do a second take, a safety take. every single vocal on 6 albums. First take.
Patrick was saying the same the same thing about Madonna. She never sung a second take ever.
That's amazing.
Is that because they wouldn't remember the words for a second take?
I will ask him.
All right, well, let's change gears just a little bit. Just a little bit looking back one more time, and then we're going to move on. But past 5 years, anybody have any technology, anything really that you thought was going to work out that just kind of faded away to your surprise? For instance, 5.1 audio for Bobby. And that
music audio, right. for music
right.
only.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah.
But anybody else have anything that kind of went by the wayside?
I can't really think about anything because I just went through the flow of the changes.
Right.
So I can't really say, oh, I really hoped that thing was going to be mainstream or not. I don't know, maybe.
I kind of thought, and actually it was related to 5.1 music, I thought DSD for music instead of PCM recording.
Right.
Because DSD sounds so much better than normal sampling.
Right.
But
yeah,
the public doesn't care as much about the sound quality as the convenience, and MP3s just kicked its butt.
I'm surprised that keyboards are kind of just going away, like the big keyboards. I mean, you still have a couple, you know, cool little keyboard every now and then, but really, you know, the mega board from the Korg or for the Roland, it's just not the way it was. I mean, they still come out.
Think?
No, because even the one that they just came out with at the NAMM show was like, okay, it was nice, but it's just, I don't know. I just remember
the Korg Oasis was like the giant space shuttle thing. You felt like you were flying, and the new one, the Kronos, it definitely feels smaller and. You know, it's their big flagship.
Oh, is that what you mean? Okay.
Yeah.
But the need for those kind of machines changed.
Right.
Because now people that want something really groundbreaking, they look into soft synths.
Right. No. And soft synths are great, but I'm just talking about the physical keyboards. I'm talking about the big Korg keyboard, the big Roland keyboard.
Yeah, that also tells you about how much has changed the way of making music because you have one octave. So whatever you do, it can really be a super complex chord progression. You don't have enough keys. Mm. So you just stick to what you have. That determines the quality of your
music. It's pathetic, really. All right, well,
it's
got five notes.
It's going to get to part rolling.
Yesterday I was watching a video on YouTube about this group of people that made a commercial for AT&T playing their own iPad and iPods, whatever, with different instruments, and they were all playing. Okay, one was the drummer, then there was the guitar player, and they were looking into each other's like, do we look like morons here? I had the feeling it wasn't anything close to a real band where the drummer, you feel the energy coming your way. It was like the drummer was like, I hope they trust me because I'm trying hard.
That's so sad.
Yeah, that was kind of, you know.
Well, the trick with stuff like that is just to be the first one doing it.
Yeah.
Because it doesn't matter if it's cool or not. It's mainly cool that you were the first one to think of it.
You know something? We're talking about the 5 years past because of the 100th.
Right.
The Centipod that we're doing.
That's right. Centipods.
But if we look 5 years ahead, believe it or not, I actually am more optimistic because I do really think that the music industry as a business has died. It's dead. I mean, forget about anything else. You're barely selling anything anymore.
Right.
So artists can't really live on selling records. So possibly they won't all rush to sound the same because it's not selling. So perhaps we will start to get more creative people.
I think it will happen.
I really do think so.
I think
underground will start to bubble up and people actually start to be proud about being musicians again, but actually playing. Because back in, obviously, we're talking 5 years back, but if you even 20 years ago, you could ask the same question. There was 20 years ago, young people were proud to be able to play their instrument, bass, guitar, keyboards, flute, whatever it is, but be really good at it and say, man, I'm playing this guy's part. And I can,
right.
And they took pride at a great deal of pride in being artistic, being a good player. Everybody's like, they don't really care. They want to get a good hairdo and press a couple of buttons.
Even though in these days, and I can just mention one name as an example, Jack Conte, okay?
Okay.
Jack created his own style of doing things and he's very passionate about, and there's a lot of people that follow his work, and he's a virtuoso in what he does.
Right.
Which is not just playing an instrument. It's really creating your own form of presenting your art. So I think for people like him, there's going to be a future because you are so passionate and so strong about what you do that sooner or later someone will just want to be associated with your art.
It's true.
I hope it will happen right. because it makes sense.
Eventually it will, but I think in a way, because you know, if we fondly look back at the 80s and 90s, but really if we obviously do remember, there's a lot of crap there, a lot of homogenized music. We go back to the 70s and say that, but I do think that maybe now it's actually, now the music industry has collapsed. The financial side of making money selling records is really collapsed.
Well, I'm going to interrupt you for just a second, because actually that's along the lines of what we're going to be talking about on the second half of the podcast. So before we look forward,
go with the
vuvuzela. I'm going to get my vuvuzela out right now.
Right in.
I'm just going to unzip the trousers. Carry on.
But before we do that, really quick before the break, I want everybody to think about one piece of gear or software plugin that didn't make the upgrade cycle and you're no longer using. For instance, I used to like a software program called Sampler, the Unity DS1. Sounded great. And GigaSampler. That was also another one.
Yeah.
Anybody have one that didn't survive these past 5 years?
GigaStudio, I had four of them fired. Absolutely fired. I was only too pleased to get rid of those because they sucked. But they did come out with streaming hard drives.
I know,
so
they were
fantastic.
Yeah, I can tell you this. I don't remember specifically the names, but I can tell that I replaced plugins that I was using because there are so many new ones and they sound good.
Right.
And so it's an evolution.
Shall I tell you something really pathetic? I'm just buying Martin Page's 24-track studio. That's all. I am. That's what we're doing. That's pretty sad, right?
Brandon.
Everybody's going that way. I'm going this way. Like,
yo, plug in you.
But in 5 years, that will make sense.
You know what?
I don't know. Maybe.
My plug-in that didn't make it is Pro Tools. I've never adopted Pro Tools. I started outside of Pro Tools. I haven't needed to do it, and I have not adopted it. I like Cubase. You know, the Cubase Nuendo route. Ableton Live is my favorite go-to program right now.
Okay. So. Hey, I will tell you, I think Pro Tools is going to be around a little longer.
I know it's an industry standard.
Yeah.
But then again, as they say, 60 billion flies eat crap, and I don't. Yeah. So carry on.
any software? Yeah, I mean, you have it all. So.
Yeah. No, in 5 years, the thing that's gotten retired the most is the Waveframe, probably, which was absolutely the best-sounding sampler ever created and still is. I still don't have anything that sounds better than it. It's just not practical anymore. And anybody who's not familiar with the Waveframe should look it up. I'm sure there are historic websites that talk about it, but it was an incredible sampler that was able to... that's actually how I met Scott Gershon originally, was at a trade show talking about the Waveframe. But that thing, you could sample a sound and drop it 12 octaves, and it still sounded totally clean and pure. It was amazing. You could take a bird chirp and turn it into an earthquake.
Yeah.
And it sounded incredible. There's nothing even close to how good it sounded. But just for practicality, we don't really go to it anymore. And there are some plugins, like the GRM tools that I used to use on everything.
Right.
But because they're not being updated the way some of the others are, I find myself having to obsolete them just because they're just not being updated. And progress continues. New computers come out. You know, when Snow Leopard came out, a lot of plugins stopped working. When Mac Intels came out, a lot stopped working.
Yeah.
That's healthy, actually.
Well, hey, listen, we're going to take a break now. It was kind of fun looking back. And when we come back from the break, I'm going to need your help, guys. And that's all I'm going to tell you. I'm just going to need your help. All right. So we'll see you on the other side.
Woo!
All right, so we'll see you on the other side.
You're listening to the Audio Nowcast, sponsored by Aphex and Westwave Audio. Have a question for the panel? Would you like to be a guest on the Audio Nowcast and live in the LA area? Email us at audio@nowcastnetwork.com.
Welcome back to the Audio Nowcast. And before the break, we were talking about failed products of the last 5 years.
Uh-huh.
It sounds like my career.
That's longer than 5 years,
though. Whoa! Nice one!
He's been practicing.
Well, it was fun to look back at the podcast, and it's great. And one thing that I forgot to mention is we had a hard time doing a giveaway at the very beginning.
Oh, yes, we did.
There was a DMP7 that we still owe.
Oh, man.
David, and I know his name. So, David, if you're out there, I don't think it's coming.
I still have it. It's still sitting in my garage.
Under 4 inches of water.
But in reality, he didn't want that anyhow.
He didn't want it the way it was. It just didn't work.
Yeah.
I've tried so hard to fix the motorized faders. I wasted so many nights trying to fix the little rubber bands on that thing.
Yeah.
I just said, this is not working.
So a giant failure.
Yeah.
Which is a good segue into the next thing we're going to talk about. And, you know, recently, I don't know if you guys knew this, but Guitar Hero, they're not going to be doing any more Guitar Hero.
I heard about it.
They're not going to be doing any more Rock Band. I mean,
the Heroes are gone.
The whole, you know, game music thing has kind of played its role, and which is kind of a shame because actually my son, who's a special needs kid, he actually learned how to play the drums with Rock Band, and he can do the hi-hat, kick, and snare, and he actually plays now all the Beatles tunes and all that. And
is Rock Band done too, or just Guitar Hero?
No, Rock Band's on its last leg also.
Oh.
And that's really a shame because that was one of the few instruments where you could really learn how to play it with this game. And they just came out with the keyboard, and even then he picked up the keyboard and he can play the keyboard, and they actually make you do little chords and simple things, and it was amazing. So you look at the demise of music. You look at, you know, just the music that's out there right now, it's not the best. You look at the quality of it. Some of the major labels, and I'm not going to mention anybody in particular, but you know some of the big records of last year that came out that just did not sound great, you know, whether it's the auto-tuned vocals or just the music itself. Not to mention the fact that music, the way it's being sold, you have Sony that's going to pull out of iTunes and they want to do their own thing. So the one thing of iTunes that everybody was like the focus for being able to buy music and things like that, that's under attack. It just seems like music in general is under attack, and I'm depressed. It's just really a bummer. And so I wanted to ask you guys...
I'm depressed now, Mike. I don't know if I can really talk after that. Can you?
Give me some hope. Let's give me some hope. Give the readers, the listeners some hope, because...
Well, you could do something else.
I'll give you some hope.
I'm going to ask you guys. We're going to open up this section. I need hope. Give me some hope.
I'll give it to you. Yes, the music business is in trouble. It's not the way it used to be. It's still bigger than you'd ever think. There was 326 million records sold last year. I know this because I just wrote it in a blog. It's a $7 billion industry. There were 1.5 billion downloads that were paid for last year. That's a lot of music that's still being bought. 326 million CDs, albums, of which there's 225 million of those, are still CDs. There's a big business out there still. It's not what it used to be, but it's still a big business. So if you can't discount that, there's still people out there that are buying this stuff and buying it more than they ever did. Now, is the industry making more money? No, it's making a whole lot less. Is there a problem with the industry? You bet. But is there still an audience that wants to buy music? Yes, more so than ever. Does that give you hope?
Gives me a little hope. a little bit of hope, but it just seems like, you know, budgets are going down for special project music and things like that. I mean, Rob, what makes you get up in the morning and do your gig?
Drugs.
Yeah. I was going to say the huge stack of bills on the kitchen counter.
I mean, obviously, you have to be...
I'm lucky in that I love what I do. Right. I always tell people you should love what you do. You should be willing, you know, as long as you can stay indoors doing it and keep a roof over your head. If you really love what you do, you'd want to do it even if you weren't being paid to do it. And that's still the way I feel about making music and doing sound. I need to earn a living and I need to stay indoors, but... It's my favorite thing to do, so I'd be doing it even if I wasn't getting paid to do it. And that's really, at this point, that's the only reason to go into the music industry, is if you feel like you just could not do anything else or wouldn't want to do anything else. But you have to do it like you'd be willing to do it for free, because you might be. At least for a while.
Martin, what motivates you to write?
And well, it's exactly the same thing as what Rob says. You know, I'm still a fanatic and a child over it. So, you know, I still feel the same way I did when I was 12 years old, you know, seeing the Beatles on TV doing Top of the Pops. It was the same magic. I still feel that. You have a few dips in your career when you might sort of stop off and think about, you know, where you really want to, what kind of branch you want to move off into. But it's never left me that it's magic, as Rob just said. It's magic. You wake up in the morning and you go. And I've been very fortunate that I've you know, had a career when people were buying records, and so it put me into a position where I could carry on doing what I wanted to do without too much fear of what was happening. But you know, I still it's as naive and as noble as it sounds, I still get off on walking in the guitar center and seeing the guitars on the wall and people playing them. I still get off on the magic of it. And if I didn't have that, I wouldn't be doing it, you know. So, as Rob says, if the money wasn't there, I'd still be working out of a way how I could be near it. Uh-huh. I'd have to be near music in some capacity. And I don't think music's ever going to not be there. Right. It's just going through a starvation period at the moment, which, you know, hopefully, as Bob has said as well, that there's going to be a groundswell again of people wanting to have reverence for it. Because at the moment, there's not much reverence for music yet. In our early days, 60s and 70s and 80s, we keep on talking about that. There was a kind of reverence, and that's been a little bit lost because the beauty of digital is that it helps everything move along at a tremendous rate, but it also makes things get cheaper.
Right.
You know, but no, I mean, I when I get up in the morning, it's the first thing I think about is what song I'm on or what I'm writing. I'm on that. I'm thinking about that now. I'm pissed off because I haven't got a chorus on a song. So, you know, you're either addicted or you're not.
Yeah.
Bobby Summerfield.
Oh.
He is addicted.
I'm
addicted.
Can't,
not really.
Give me some hope, Bobby. I need some hope. Bobby. You've got a studio. You're working all the time.
I am. I'm lucky. I'm very lucky. I'm one of the very lucky few.
What keeps you moving?
You know, I mean, I do love music to an obsession. I really do. I love music. I still listen to songs that I still love, bands that I still love. I still really get thrilled about mixes. I still listen to stuff. And try and get the mix sounding better, although I'm not doing it for the client. The client's long gone unhappy. It's on the on the air already, and I pull it apart and add drums. I just do it as a hobby, you know. Mm. So I do it to keep my chops up because I like to be able to mix. If I hear a good sounding record, I generally stick it on my console and whip it out of phase and see what the engineer's doing and go, oh, let me learn how they're doing this, because I really do love it. I love the science of it. I love the art of being a nerd, a music nerd. But you do have to be. You have to really love it. You do really have to love it. There, the industry, you're right, everybody's said, and it's common knowledge, that you're not going to make as much money doing it as you did before. But I think one of the – I'll give you hope, but unfortunately I'll give you one thing which will have to change, is that because of digital – and not just because of the digital process, because that's just another tool, but because technology is putting the ability to make – music tracks in the hands of non-musicians is good and bad, but people are blurring the line between an editor and a musician. And I'm not saying they're both very creative jobs. I'm not saying that. But when you have a bunch of competent musicians playing together, even if they're incompetent, it's fine. But if they're actually playing together and they're doing something, it's a little bit of a time delay between somebody buying a laptop and pressing a couple of buttons and getting on a looping program saying I've done a track. So I think to answer your question for hope is that the groundswell Paige betterly articulated that I said is I think people are all – there's so many people saying the same thing. I'm not saying the only thing.
Right.
So many young kids – I'm lucky enough to play soccer with a bunch of guys, and they're 25. And they're like – they listen to, you know, the discovering bands that I'm like forgotten about. Fantastic. ELO, one of them. But even the obscure bands, and they go, how did they get that sound? Wow, that drummer was so good. Why was he so good? I was like, he could play. And again, of course, that they're also going, well, it's kind of weird, you know. He goes out of time there. Doesn't he go out of time there? I'm going, yeah, he does. But you don't, you know, play right. For 4 minutes, he screwed up there. But he took you on a journey. The band takes you on a journey.
Right.
That love and that connection, there's a human connection that I think, as I said many podcasts ago, I think humans are connected to the human voice most.
Right.
they hear a voice. You hear a choir make you cry.
Yep.
Even a great band will make you cry. And I said, but I think humans are eventually all getting together and saying, I want something. This old stuff, whatever it was, it's not analog. It's not just because it's analog. It was music. It was
right.
live.
Right.
It was live guys or girls playing. I think that is going to come around because the crowd, the demand will want it. They may have to start to pay for it, and possibly that is the beginning of a new thing. We'll almost be talking, hopefully, in 5 years' time, saying, wow, this is a new site. It's a little more expensive, but it's got real players on it, and it's only real players. It's all bands, but it's more expensive. It's $2 a download or $1.12. Right.
I think it's an interesting thing what Bob's saying there, that the recent number one in the charts is a folk rock record by the Decemberists, which sounds like an offshoot of R.E.M., played live, no auto-tune.
Yeah,
and that's it's something about humanity. You'll find that Johnny Cash and the simple communication, the voice and the lyrics will always last longer than the overproduced gloss. So, we've only really got to look at, maybe this is a reaction as well, because the Decemberists have just, knocked everybody else out of the park, and they're old-fashioned Civil War folk rock.
Mumford and Sons.
Yeah.
Another good example.
Yes. Yeah. So that's a good sign. That's hope.
Yeah. You know, it's amazing that how things, there's like this natural cycle of stuff, and even music's going through it. Last weekend I was in Las Vegas for a friend's birthday and got to.
You sure you were there for a birthday? What?
Okay. That's why we're now all on one microphone. No, but I got to see the show from Cirque.
Love.
No, I saw the Elvis one, the new Elvis one.
Oh.
And I'm not a big Elvis fan at all. I will tell you, I'm not a huge Elvis fan. But after seeing that, I really appreciated his music. I appreciated all that he stood for. But I realized, Elvis is not too different than some of the megastars that we have now. I mean, with his, not only did he have his music career, but he had his film career, and he was just giant star. And you look at all the, you put him on the same level, as the star quality of Justin Timberlake, who goes through his whole thing, and he was a musician, and now he's getting into films and things like that. It just seems like there's a cycle that just keeps moving over and over and over again. So maybe there's a little hope in that we'll catch the next wave. But Diego, give me some hope, man. What's going to...
Well, I can tell you, it might not be necessarily hope in terms of music industry, because I really am. I don't see anything interesting there. I see a lot of interesting things going on with people. I see people doing a lot of things. Just by reading Synthopia or other blogs, you see an ininterrupt flux of ideas and people trying to do something. Some of those are great, some just suck, but people do something. They don't stop. They don't. Sales don't seem to be the motivation why they do things. They just want to do them because they have at the core this desire of making music. And I think this is strong as it was before. So this, to me, it's a major sign of hope for musicians, because music, it's still something that people need.
Yeah.
And maybe right now there isn't too much sales supporting the, because we still have the need of making music, but we don't necessarily have the sources to sustain that. But maybe it's going to change, and there's going to be new ways of musicians doing what they love and make a career out of what they do. But what I see is that new type of careers are emerging, and we are at the beginning of that. YouTube opened something that wasn't there before, so some people are still finding themselves, I see that thing is working, but I don't really know how to make it work in this way. And so there's going to be something massive coming out of it. It's not clear yet,
right?
But the vitality and the energy is totally there.
Where the hope can come from too is that real talent and really great ideas always end up getting discovered eventually. So if you're really good at what you do, eventually you're going to be discovered for it, as long as you're just not, staying in a dark closet by yourself doing it forever. But real talent, really good songs always end up getting discovered eventually. And there's nothing to stop anybody from sitting down at a keyboard or a guitar and writing a song that's going to affect the entire world. You just have to sit down and do it. And so you have just as much of a chance of coming out with that song that's going to change the world as anybody else does. You just got to sit and do it. It's one of the things I've brought it back several times that Martin said like 15 years ago on the podcast or something. I forget. But you've got to show up for the gig. Mm-hmm. That was the exact words you used, which is true. You could, if you work at home, like I do and you do and a lot of us do, if you work at home and you're your own boss and you're, you know, it's up to you to make sure you go to work. Well, the trick is you got to show up for the gig. You got to actually sit down with the guitar or the piano and try to write something. It's not going to write itself.
Right.
It's like you're not going to win the lottery if you don't buy a ticket.
Right.
It's the same kind of thing.
And also,
there's nothing stopping you from sitting down. It doesn't cost you anything. Just sit down and do it.
Exactly. This commitment needs to be there. For example,
right.
You don't have the motivation of selling records right now, but still, you could be motivated by reaching, I don't know, 100,000 views on your videos and then move to 1 million, 2 million. That could be a motivation, and that could lead to something else. And so you need to be really serious and passionate about what to do.
Right. That's true. I will tell you, though, that I've bought a lottery ticket and haven't won. So I just
you do like gambling.
Brandon, give me some hope, Brandon.
Here's a little hope, Mike. Another thing that's really cool, I mean, we've seen for years, decades, hundreds of years, whatever, we've been limited to a few different kinds of instruments, piano, guitar, you know, horns, drums, whatever. We're seeing now with the iPad and with different soft synths, all these different ways, like, of approaching music, of manipulating sound, like the React table that you've seen, and these various different ways of approaching it that we haven't seen before. It's like people, you know, maybe it's like a piano was unapproachable, maybe a guitar was unapproachable, but this weird way of turning a knob or moving this fader or, you know, using this iPad to swirl your finger and interacting in this weird way, that's giving this, you know, opening this door to a lot of people that may have been, you know, afraid previously, or maybe not afraid is the right word, but just intimidated or maybe didn't have access to, but now they have access to this.
Or piano wasn't necessarily your instrument.
That's true.
You know, because still we have, what do you play? It's funny to say, what if I play the iPad? What if I play something else? It sounds funny now, but I don't know, 600 years ago, if someone asked, what do you play? I play the piano. What?
No, that's
don't
true.
You play flute? I mean,
that's
everybody
true.
Plays flute. Why do you want to play piano?
Yeah.
I mean, it sounds so, it's so big. It's the same thing. We are in the middle of a major revolution.
It's a huge
and
transition
we can't really
going on.
See where we're going, but we are just... It's like a tumbleweed, you know?
But the fundamental is that people, the only way you connect with the world is through, you know, primarily through melody and lyrics and to a certain extent the tracks. And the tracks are really important. But if you're writing a song, that's very different than producing a recording. And the thing that I don't think you have to be intimidated by, because it's easy to be intimidated with technology. And if you walk into a studio that has way too many gadgets, that can be intimidating. Whether it's an iPad or a keyboard or whatever your instrument is, the point is to learn that tool well enough that you're not thinking of it. You don't have to think about it anymore as you're using it. But really, that's just a tool to create the song that's going to touch the world. The way you really connect with an audience hasn't changed. It's all about the song.
But can I offer you another point of view? For example, the same thing that I said about instruments. This is something that I'm just bringing my example because this is a big surprise to me as it was for other people. When I did Music from a Tree, I had no idea what I was exactly going to do. And the kind of response that I had out of that video, it's unexpected. I got gigs, I got stuff, I'm doing things out of it. And I don't know if you want to call it a song or a composition, whatever it is, because it's kind of hard to categorize.
Right.
Well, people aren't walking around singing it after they hear it. They're blown away by the novelty of it.
But I got an email from a guy saying, my kid is miming your movements on a little tree that we have in the living room. So I was like, really? And so it was like, I couldn't imagine something like this. And I'm sure that there's many other things going on. I don't know. Right now, it sounds so funny. It's like, okay, so what? Well, so what? What's the point of playing your guitar for hours and hours and hours? People now want to play a tree or something like that.
So this kid now wants to be a tree player.
Right. It looks like. When I got the email, I was like, I can't believe it.
Just imagine.
And this little kid, because this little kid doesn't really have the preconception about piano is a real instrument, the tree is not a real instrument.
Right.
It's just saw the video. It's like, I think that looks fun. I want to do it too.
No, that's true. Cool. You're right. Sense. And I bet the second part was, can you please tell him to stop?
Right.
He's killing
I'm
the plants.
I'm afraid to come down. I'm going to have to cut that tree soon. But
yeah. Well, you know what, guys? I feel better. There's some hope there. There's some hope out there.
There's hope.
And that kind of came through an email that I got from a listener because he was really depressed about – because we're – you know, a lot of students listen to our podcasts, and he was just looking at this journey that he was going to start because he wanted to be a recording engineer and he wanted to get into music. And it's not going to be easy, but as you can tell that, you know, it seems like the main thing you need
but
to have is passion.
Something.
Has it ever been easy?
Exactly. Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
That's true.
It never changed, actually.
And you know what? Even in the days when the money was rolling like crazy, if you set out to write a song based on what you thought was going to sell, it never worked. Because it was usually derivative of something else that was already selling, and you know you want to be the original, yep. not the copy. So a lot of these equations haven't changed.
No, that's true. You're right.
I think money's always ruined art throughout history, yeah. basically. I mean, it really has. Directly, anybody starts to hump. You know, in the 70s, when music was really cool and free, everybody said, oh, let's make some more of this. And the next minute, it was all homogenized, and obviously we're...
But you're quite happy with your Maserati, aren't
well,
you?
I am, yes. it's a cool version.
But I will say, you know, as I look around this table, though, and Scott and the guys that aren't here, you know, that's one thing that I think everybody has in common is that everybody works. Yeah, everybody works really hard at what they do. Mm-hmm. I know all of you guys, and you all put in amazing hours at what you do. You know, whether it's you, Martin, writing your songwriting, or Bobby, your writing, or Diego, your sound, or Brandon, and your sound design, and Bobby, whatever you do.
Bobby can Maserati as well.
It just seems like you can't be just good old-fashioned hard work, you know, spending those hours by yourself in the studio just learning and trying to practice and trying to get better and get better. And
but
get
also,
better.
I think we all came to it because we just loved it, you know. Yeah. I mean, it's surprising. You don't usually meet people that have got into music and, you know, that are playing instruments or developing music unless they were turned on by, you know, in a kind of obsessional kind of way that they loved it, you know. And I think that's what's kept the longevity. And I think the big thing about hope here is that there's always going to be music.
Yeah.
It's not going to go away. So it's always going to be one to be born.
It's all going to be through auto-tune. But.
Malcolm Gladwell's 10,000 Hours. Mm. You know.
Yeah, I read that book.
Yeah.
Outliers,
Malcolm Gladwell basically says that at 10,000 hours, then you become qualified to create, become something.
It's like saying...
You're not a genius until you go through the 10,000 hours.
And I read a quote saying, it's funny how years and years of work can turn into an overnight success.
Right.
Yeah.
That's so true. It's, you know, it's amazing just when you get right down to it and music and how... Just it's just this magical thing. You know, when you listen to a good song, I could not quantify why I like a song. I just know I like it. And I just know if I'm driving and I'm feeling down and I hear music, it can absolutely change my mood like that. And it's just I think that's one of the things that really turns me on about the industry and about just working and doing the things that we do is that you know, there's magic. There is still magic, you know. And that's and whatever that voodoo is with the chords that we like that really appeal to us. And what's amazing about music is, you know, we have a Western perspective for music and how are chords and songs and things like that. But then you go to places like China or you go to India where they're totally different chord structures and different sounds. And the music affects them just the same way. And it's like we, you know, some of that stuff we don't get and it may not sound good to us and they're just loving it, you know? And it's just, I mean, I wish, you know, you can't quantify how it affects people. It's just, that's why I say it's magical. It truly is magical. Just however the energy and the music and the harmonics or whatever just affect people. But it's one of the few places.
I think Mike's given us hope, isn't he?
Yeah,
he's
much
more turned it around. 15
tone from now on. That's what this is. I want the 15 tone auto tune.
Well, hey, listen, we're gonna wrap up this 100th podcast.
Wow, buddy.
Are we clapping because we're finally wrapping it up? but before I go, there's a couple things I need to say. First of all, I need to thank somebody for the podcast who's really come in and done a great job. And we gotta give it up for Jeremy.
Yeah.
Jeremy was a listener that came in and just wanted to visit and sit in, and he actually emailed me and he could buy us coffee, and I said no, they drink much harder than coffee. but he came in and he sat and we just hit it off, and he just wanted to be a part of it, and Jeremy does a fantastic job, so we got to give it up for Jeremy. And also Ken Kane is here. He's
Kenny Kane.
Ken helped us out for a ton of shows, a couple years, shows like from like 40 to like 70 40? Or something.
Like 10.
Mm-hmm. No, you're more than that. But he did a lot of editing of the shows and a lot of mixing of the shows, and so I got to give it up for Ken. Thanks for coming back, Ken. And then I just want to thank all you guys, because you know what? You don't have to come here. It's not like you get paid.
We don't? Wait a minute.
No.
Wait, we don't have to come here? I thought we had to come here.
And I will tell you this. I think our panel here has probably the best group of guys of any podcast that's out there. And if you, I was thinking about this. I was thinking about the between Scott and Bill and everybody and Forrest.
And by the way, hi to Bill.
Right.
Yes. Yeah. Oh, yeah, to Bill and Forrest and Scott and Andrew.
Yeah. From Austin. Yeah. Yeah.
And I was thinking about that. And, you know, there is a chance that right now there is something playing on the air or on TV that we've been associated with.
Oh, yeah.
In one way or another.
Definitely.
All the time. Yeah. But 24/7. Yeah. I'm seeing it between the television commercials that I know that have been produced and the promos and the music and the sounds and things like that. I mean, our panel is responsible for something being out there.
I tell you, all I can say is I'm bloody well hope so. That's the way to put it. Something out there.
I just think that's amazing. I mean, I really think it's amazing. You guys are great, and I think we put together a really cool little podcast. I'm really proud of, and I just thank all you guys. And I want to thank the new members and Bobby being the newest one. Each of you guys have really just interjected a great opinion and a sense of energy in Diego and Brandon when you guys came on board. It's been awesome. So thank you so much.
Who's the guy who started this all off? Who's the main man? Mr. Rodriguez.
So it's really
for you as well.
Yeah.
I mean, the podcast all came from you, buddy.
It still does.
Yeah, that's right.
I thought we were going to do a show. All right. Well, hey, if you have any, before we go to, I really want to thank the listeners that are out there. And I want to specifically the guys that are on the Facebook page and who are very active. You know, everybody, you know, I've made some really good friends through the podcast. You know, Mark and Jack out in New York. And, you know, we got the guys like, Carl and Steve and, Mark and Dave and just a bunch of different guys, Doug and Richard. You know, they're all really active. They all post stuff.
Where's the chicks?
I was going to say.
You got some, but they're quiet.
Okay, from my podcast 101, I'm going to take over. We want chicks. Old Tards, bring them on.
But I want to thank all the listeners out there for putting up with us, and you've got some really great, you know, ideas, and had a listener, I think his name was Andrew, sent me a really great email on how to make the podcast sound better. He sent a lot of really great stuff, and I was like, you know what, this guy's right. And if I had more time, but there's definitely, I think when I see what these guys are doing out, and if you ever get a chance, go on the Facebook and just kind of follow some of the links. You know, there's some guys doing some really great stuff out there. And you know what, music is it's in some ways, I think it's
there really, is a future, isn't there?
Yeah, yes. There's
and
a future
hope.
And you know what, it's really one of the things that can cross, you know, boundaries and can
it's
bring
the common
people together.
Language. Yeah.
And you know, and it's just, you know what's incredible? The fact that right now on my iPhone I've got every single Beatles album. And that to me is amazing. Oh. It's like I can carry that around with me all the time. And as much as you say, you know, people talk about the digital revolution and the negative effects with it, the fact that I have my Beatles library with me all the time is
makes you
pretty
damn
okay. All right. So if you have any comments or questions, you can reach us at audio@nowcastnetwork.com. That's audio@nowcastnetwork.com. But before we go, Rob, you working on anything fun and interesting?
Actually, this year has started off amazing. for music projects, which, you know, I've always said my career goes up and down with music and post and web design and programming and photography and all kinds of other things over the years. But this year started off with a bang in music, and I can talk about three projects. One is, for the first time, I wrote music for a commercial for the Super Bowl.
Wow.
Which had never happened before. I'd done halftime shows. I worked on the Michael Jackson halftime show a million years ago and the Stevie halftime show at one point. But had we done a podcast right before the Super Bowl, I would have been able to give you the heads up to watch for it. But it was a commercial for Groupon with Cuba Gooding Jr.
Yeah.
And it started as like a Save the Whales kind of commercial.
I saw it.
And apparently Groupon got into all kinds of controversy with some other ads.
They did, big time.
They did. But we got a lot of publicity out of that ad. And actually, you'll be able to see the ad. We're getting a copy this weekend. It'll be up on my website at noisyneighbors.com.
And so we'll link to it.
You can link to it. And you should check out noisyneighbors.com. That's the website for my company that I've been building. And it's it's got some cool stuff on it. The second project that was pretty cool is I wrote music for Boeing for a bunch of their industrial films, like in-house stuff about the 787. So that was pretty cool. This was all at the same time, so it was not a boring month in January. And the other thing was we just finished 8 minutes of music for a museum in Singapore at a hotel called the Marina Bay Sands. And if you get a chance, you should look it up. It's called the Marina Bay Sands, three words. It's owned by Sands, like Sands Resorts. Yeah. And there's a museum there called the Art Science Exhibition. And it is absolutely, just architecturally, the most unbelievable museum. And they have a big multimedia theater. There are basically three galleries. I wrote the music for this film that plays in the multimedia theater, which is the third gallery. The first gallery is a place where you learn about inspiration.
Right.
And there's a second gallery in the middle with no music. But check this out. They were worried, because these rooms are all connected, that you can hear the bleed from one room into another. So first, I wrote the music for the 8-minute film that plays in the third gallery. And then I was telling Bobby O about this earlier. I had to write music for the first gallery that would be harmonically friendly if you heard it up against the third gallery. Okay. So I put the music, once the music for the third gallery was done, I put it on the speakers really softly, practiced a few times, and then wrote at the piano an entire new piece of music, completely unrelated melody-wise and the feel of it, completely different instrumentation. But I did it in a way where the chords sympathetically work with the third gallery. So if you happen to stand in the room between the two, you'll hear these two, one's more like a band, one's more like an orchestra, playing unrelated pieces of music, but it always works harmonically. So you never hear it rub. And I had never had to do anything like that before, but it turned out really cool.
See? Yeah. Smartest man in the room all the time.
I told you, but
he could have used a vuvuzela, would have done the same thing.
It doesn't matter which room you come from.
It's just as annoying everywhere.
That's awesome.
But if you get a chance, I saw the website for the Marina Bay Sands and the Art Science Exhibition. You should check it out. It's really an incredible place.
Wow, that's
and
awesome.
I don't know that we're ever going to be able to put that music on our website. When you're there, it plays in a giant room with, I think it's a 40 or 50 foot wide screen. It's pretty amazing. And I know the ceiling, it's like 7 stories tall. You just have to see it. It's incredible.
Crazy. That's crazy.
So it's been an incredible start of the year.
7 stories.
That's great. That's awesome. Bobby.
My year so far, well, I'll tell you, on the 27th of January, I turned 50.
Yeah!
So to celebrate, I took out 54 of my best mates, including Martin Page, on a double-decker English bus, and we went from pub to pub.
Wearing policemen's hats.
All wearing British Bobby's helmet.
Oh, nice.
And I have pictures to prove it. But I can't remember any of it. That's how my year started. No, on a musical technical note, good news is I got nominated for my 4th Daytime Emmy. So it's that one, I'm going to get it, but I'm going to buy a tux this time because I'm fed up and rented it. And I changed over. Technically, I'm working on a bunch of silly projects. I can't really talk about it just yet. One of the things I've just changed over from Windows, my Windows door. I was working on new door. I've just changed over, bought a 12-core Mac with 30 gigs of RAM, and it's screaming. Very
welcome
nice.
To the family.
Yeah, it's nice. Very nice to be. Have a Mac again.
We will tell you how to think.
Exactly.
And I hand it over to Brandon.
Brandon!
What's up?
I know what we should be working on.
Yes, me and you should be working right now.
But we can't talk about that yet.
Yes. But what has consumed my time this year has been this new
this song we had to write, a surf rock, like Dick Dale-esque tune for Rango, which should be finishing on Monday, so I believe I can talk about that now. And we had to do this little surf rock thing with a bunch of lyrics and auditioned a bunch of singers. And the funny thing is that I ended up being the voice they chose.
Nice!
And I was like the throwaway. It was like, oh, I'll just do this as an example and they'll choose one of these other ones. But they went with my voice. So you may hear me on Nickelodeon pretty soon.
Very nice. So you're going to buy a poster of Rango and put it in
I'm going to have a big poster in my office. I'll replace that Terminator Salvation poster.
Great.
And other than that, a lot of other things going on at Trailer Park that maybe I can't talk about right now. But
great,
yeah, very busy.
Diego.
So I'm working on a new video that I've been some troubles putting together, but it's getting there. It's this idea that I wanted to do something with an instrument I built a while ago. I didn't really do anything with it, so I had this idea of combining this instrument with the real-time sound design processing that I do in live, the similar kind of thing that I'm doing with Patrick.
Right.
And that's something that I'm excited about because it's coming out. It's sounding great. It's going to be tricky to put together the video because I had some problems with the footage, but that's one thing. And then I'm ready to start working on another project, which I can't say anything about it, but I say I hope I will come out safe and still alive because there's going to be chances of hurting myself pretty badly. But if
this is the one where the tree plays him.
Yes, yes.
So if Diego asks to borrow any gear, guys, say no.
No, it's not going to be safe for anything.
Bobby,
I've been really busy this year so far. I'm in pre-production for an album I'm producing. A new book just came out that I wrote, The Ultimate Guitar Tone Handbook. There's another one, Touring Musician's Handbook, that I wrote last year that's going to come out pretty soon. And, I'm in the middle of writing a couple of things and writing some music and busy, busy.
It frustrates me that you've written so many more books than I've read. Like, total in life. I do not know how you find the time, because I've read some of your books, and the amount of research that goes into them and how much work is, I just have no idea how you do it.
Me either.
Martin.
Yeah, it was a great end of the year for me, because I actually did finish my record to the point where all the tracks are written, and I'm very excited about that. And from the album before that, a song was cut by Robbie Williams called The Long Walk Home, which I produced with Bobby.
Amazing.
And it turned out great. And that led to me working more with Robbie on some more songs for some future things, which is a lot of fun. And I hope to be doing that again with Bobby. And off of the last album, a track called Mi Morena, which was cut by Josh Groban, was done by Elaine Page for her Duets album, which just recently went gold. And I rewrote the lyrics for that for a duet, for it to be like a classic duet record. And so the beginning of the new year has just been preparing the new album and trying to sell my studio to Bobby.
It sounds like you've been successful.
I'm an easy target, really. That's some analog, doesn't work, do it?
Yeah, I've got some tape here, Bobby. Do you want to buy it?
I went to Switzerland to buy the car, didn't I?
Yeah,
I did.
Well, Pagey boy, it's good to have you back.
Thank you. It's been a pleasure. It's really nice to be back here and
see you in 100 years.
I'll come the next 200th.
Well, that's great.
And what are you up to there, Mike?
I'm way behind on a project I should be working on. That's about all I can talk about. Oh, I am going to be directing another music video. That's kind of cool. I'm going to be shooting that in about a month, actually. The thing is one of the things, and this can be a small tangent, but social networking has really changed the way, you can get gigs now, because it's, when people are going to release even a small release, they got to have the video, they got to have the music video, they got to have something that people can show. And it's been great for me because I've directed a couple music videos. I did one of Pagey Boy's
Yeah.
A couple of pager boys. One had 114,000 hits for me.
Yeah. Yeah, it was because of the naked girl we put in.
That one flash frame. Yeah. But really, it's just amazing how opportunities are out there. That's another thing that gives you hope, is just the fact that, you know.
Naked women, yeah.
That's Bobby said, more chicks.
More chicks. That's basically what the. Yeah.
Well, I'm going to end this. But anyhow, so I'm doing a lot more shooting and just working on some music things. So it's kind of fun and exciting. Well, hey guys, we survived podcast 100.
Woo!
Yeah. So, all right. Well, like I said, we're gonna, you know, a shout out goes to Bill and to Scott and to Forrest. They're not with us right now.
And Andrew.
And Andrew.
Yep.
And he's not with us.
Oh, the Shepster's not here, of course.
No, but he'll be back.
If he is here, he's been really quiet. So I spoke to him earlier this week, though. He's working on a massive album project that we'll all be able to talk about eventually.
Yeah.
But so, he's doing well.
Thanks, guys, for 100. Looking forward to 101, which will be in about 2 weeks. So from myself and all the guys, and hey, let's thank all the, you know, all the friends and family over here.
Thanks.
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 Thanks. Thanks.
Thanks. Thanks. That's right. There's like 1,400 of them out
yes.
there.
Yes. I counted. 1,399. Made the winner.
All right. Well, for myself and all the guys, thanks for listening, and looking forward to the next 100. Woo!
Listening to the Audio Nowcast, sponsored by Aphex and Westwave Audio. The Audio Nowcast is hosted by Mike Rodriguez and uses Aphex's 230 Master Channel Voice Processor. Thanks for listening. We'll see you next time.